Any fauna, reel six.
When we got down from Crete West, the positions, it must have been a month after, you know, landed in the area. I always remember the day, it was about May the 7th or May the 8th, when we had to evacuate Crete West. And we finished up going back to the battalion, and then orders came through that the whole of the 20th Indian Division were to be relieved by another division, you know. I can't think what the number is there.
It doesn't.
23rd. No. 23rd Indian. And yeah, they relieved us, and orders came through that the Devons had to be, the old 20th Division, 20th Indian Div, transferred to another part in, you know, in Burma, like. And we finished up the place called Nam Shi Gum. Sen Shek, one hill, and Nam Shi Gum. And I always remember that night, because the first patrol we went on was Nam Shi Gum. That's when the monsoon started. Rain, it did rain. And I always remember it because I had to put my wireless radio on and listen to the BBC news. They said, troops have landed in Normandy. It's like, always rings a bell. D-Day, so you can tell what day it was, June the 6th, when we went on the patrol at Nam Shi Gum. And I took the rain, and I was telling everybody, you know, the officers, the British troops have landed in Normandy, so everybody said, oh, it'll all be over by Christmas. You know, as that was, but they did. It wasn't until the following year, was it? So, you know, things came to an end in Burma. And Nam Shi Gum is when the monsoon started, and the Devons are all to do a patrol. It was going to last 6 weeks. We had to make a retreat to get behind the Japanese lines, because the British at Kohima were driving the Japs onto us. As I say, the battalion were ordered to go lead Nam Shi Gum, and I remember it quite well. The rain started coming down. That was the beginning of the monsoon season, and it rained. It did rain, come down in buckets. Well, I really mean it. And nobody was allowed to shave. Orders came out, nobody was allowed to shave. Nobody was allowed to take blankets. All we had was the old steel helmet or the bush hat and the old gas capes. In India, you had the gas capes. They learned all about gas attacks. These capes. That's all you had. And that's how it was. 6 weeks we had of it. And as I say, the Jets were being pushed back onto us from Kohima. And they went through hell, I tell you. And I think they worse off than us. They had no supplies coming through. We blocked the road, you know. And
with your patrol, did you know where you were going to be going?
All we knew is a company patrol. All we knew is that we've got to get behind the Japanese lines, because the Japanese were on the retreat, see. As I say, from Kohima, and driving the Japs back onto us. And, well, the state of some of them were on the Japs. They were like bits of boys. Skin, no hair on the, you know, skinheads, like they call them skinheads today, but she had all their show, bits of kids, you can believe it. And yet, using the same position, years prior to that, you know. But we captured many, many prisoners. Well, in fact, they more or less committed harikari. The graves, was, you know, piles of dead Japs. They must have committed harikari, you know. Did they commit suicide? That's what it is. You say harikari. And what a 6 weeks! It's unbelievable.
You say you captured some prisoners. What did you do with the prisoners?
They were taken back to Battalion HQ, then Divisional HQ, 20th HQ. You know, for information purposes. This patrol lasted about 6 weeks. I always remember it. It started on the night of D-Day when the troops landed in Normandy, June the 6th. About July the 17th, that's about when we finally did our job, you know. And after that, we went back to Infal, a place called Wangjing. And we stayed there until everybody had to have compulsory leave. We were just like tramps. Nobody's allowed to shave. So imagine in the 6 weeks, everybody had beards. It's funny to look at, you know. Nobody's allowed to shave. And it was just like a load of tramps at the end of the day. Your clothes were torn, your boots, you know, needed repairing.
How had you received your rations while you were on this patrol?
By airdrop. They used to drop the supplies by air, you know. And it was a case who got there first, the Japs or us. They were so near one another, you see. And it's a tussle, who got there first.
Would you have to radio for the airdrops?
Yeah, with the radio, yeah.
So what would you do? Would you contact the RAF? And stay where you wanted the airdrop?
Oh, yes. Well, all the information go back, like, to Battalion HQ, and from there to Divisional HQ. And that's where, you know, the airdrops used to land. You didn't know what they were. One day I thought we was getting food rations dropped. When we got there, all we saw was rubber boots. The Air Force had dropped a load of rubber boots, Wellingtons, like, you know. Couldn't believe it.
So what type of rations were you getting?
Oh, the rations were really poorly in them days. Just a tin of corned beef or corned mutton. And biscuits, you know, raw biscuits in the packet, dry biscuits. That's what we survived on. And I say, between us, about four of us used to get together. And that was your emergency rations. And one day, you'd open your tin of corned beef or corned mutton. It was like liquids. The heat was so hot, the meat used to be, it'd come out like liquid, the meat. We used to just put it in a pot. Four of us put one can. Next day, somebody else would do it. And that's how we lived. We'd make a stew out of the old bully beef, you know. And this is how it was. That's how we survived.
So when you got back, you were given compulsory leave?
And then suddenly, the emergency rations used to be a tin of corned beef or corned mutton and a packet of biscuits. Suddenly you heard about the Americans getting K rations, and much superior to ours. They had like a little tin, they had a packet of sugar, tea, powdered milk, three cigarettes in it. And up to that point, we didn't know how well off we was, you know. Only having tin of corned beef and biscuits month after month, you know, And suddenly we was given these clay lessons, what the Americans pilots used to fly in the old Dakotas. And eventually we started having these clay lessons, much improvement. And
I was saying, you got back to Wang, was it Wang Li, and you had
Wang Jing,
and you had compulsory.
We were in such a distressed state. When we made our way back to Wang Jing, I always remember everybody had to put their rifles in one heap. Then the next thing was your ammunition, all piles. Next thing, off come your clothing. First your rifle, then the next heap was ammunition, then the next thing was your clothing. Your equipment, you know, like Bren gun pouches and your haversack, the whole lot went in one heap as you went. You just went along the line, and as you went along, you finished naked. Everybody had to have hot baths. They made their own baths, you know, out of the old oil drums, hot water. And we finished up having a good hot wash. We needed it. Then next moment I remember everybody was first shaved yet this couple of months or 6 weeks or more. It's just like tramps. Never thought it could exist in the conditions. In the monsoon rain. Your feet was never dry, and on these patrols, we used to go across some hills, and headhunters, they used to call them headhunters, like the local inhabitants, they wrecked these huts, and we had to search them if there was any enemy there, but it was full of fleas, lice, and when you went through these huts, you were forever scratching and fleas. That was, no, everybody couldn't stop it.
Did you have a problem with leeches as well?
Yeah. Well, we got so used to leeches and scorpions, you know, we learned what to do. You light a cigarette and just burn them, and the leeches just fall off. You learned all the tricks of the trade, you know. Leeches, scorpions, centipedes, and they were quite large, you know, them centipedes, snakes, all types of snakes, grass snakes, water snakes we used to call them, like that 4 to 6 feet long they were, these snakes. We got so used to it, you know. For how the hell do we go through them conditions? When you look back on it, it makes you wonder how we survived through the months, rain, never stopped raining. And you were soaking wet every day. And during the day, I'd take my boots off, scrub my boots, wash my socks, put the other pair of socks, never dry, it was always wet, you know. Didn't have a chance of drying in the weather. Conditions so bad, the monsoons, it makes you survive. Unbelievable.
So when you got back, were you issued with new kit?
Yeah, we got brand, we had to shower, these homemade showers they made out of the old drums, and everybody had new equipment. The order came out that everybody had to have compulsory leave. They said everybody on leave. 2 weeks leave, you know, and it was either Calcutta we went or Darjeeling. I planned to go to Darjeeling, and unbelievable, lovely holiday. You found out how the half of the world lives, you know, up in the hills in Darjeeling, for instance. Everybody, the women, they all carried everything on their back, everything. It's amazing how they survived, you know, at the Darjeeling. But As I say, everybody had to have compulsory leave. That was the order of the day from Divisional HQ. Through the conditions we went through, they needed it, I can assure you. And that's how it was.
So what happened after you'd had your leave?
We came back from leave, and then I said, right, we start training again. We started training, because by that time, the Japs had been well driven back past Tamu, and eventually the battalion got orders to advance. Instead of going down our old harvest home area, we went down the Tiddim Road. Oh. And the battalion advanced down the Tiddim Road, quite a long road, I can assure you. You know, conditions just the same, like jungle-like. But not so much rain, because the monsoon is finished by then, you know. But as far as a place called Kaliwa, Kalimyo and Kaliwa, and that's where our destination was, Kaliwa, and that was where the river crossing took place. The 20 div and the 2nd div met together, and we arrived at Kaliwa. And it was that time they built the first Bailey Bridge across the Chinwin. That was and I always remember crossing it on New Year's Eve, 31st of December, 1944. I can always remember it, walking across that Bailey Bridge. It's just been erected, the Japs tried to bomb it, but it's the first Bailey Bridge. Amazing, the pontoons, how the bridge was built on, amazing. And you think of the size, you know, the width of the river, it's unbelievable.
How wide was the river?
That was in the, down Tiddim Road. It was still the Chinwin, but it went into the Irrawaddy, the other river. You know, vast country. And I remember one night, there was sort of an earth tremor. Apparently there had been an earthquake in India, back in India, right, and it travelled right through into Burma, you know. And I commend that night, sort of floated in the air for a minute, you wonder what was happening. Earth tremor it was.
On your advance down the Tiddim Road, had you seen much of the Japanese?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They was on the retreat. They was on in terrible state, the Japs. They had no rations. All they lived on was rice, and the villagers coming over our side, helping the British. Prior to that, in the early days when the Japs first invaded Burma, most of the inhabitants were going over to the Japs, you see, but they turned against them through the atrocities that they must have committed. Some of the villages, they never got it. And they came over our side, and that was a great help, you know.
Were the Japanese still resisting?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They didn't give in.
What form of resistance did that take?
They just, they never wanted to give in. They fought to the death. It's their way of life, I suppose, the Japs, say. Mind you, today they're more educated, that I think they've realised the Western world, they couldn't believe what happened in the the Western world compared to their own country. And I think today the Japanese have learnt a lot, you know, going by history. But
would they have roadblocks?
Oh yeah, always setting up roadblocks, especially down the Tiddim Road. That's where we used to get held up. Always a roadblock of some sort, and you had to clear it before you could advance, you know.
How would you clear the roadblocks?
Well, you send patrols out, see what the situation was, and report back, and then you'd probably lay on an airstrike, you know, through divisional HQ. Information went from the battalion back to the brigade, and then on to the 20th HQ, and they'd lay on an airstrike, you see. That didn't help a lot. Because the Japanese Air Force, well, we didn't have no trouble really. They was outclassed, outmaneuvered in all ways. Compared to the British, the Mitchell bombers we had, and, you know, not superior. And I think that was their downfall. Their air supply was very poor for Japs, you know, compared to the British. We always relied on the Mitchell bombers and they did the job, you know.
And you crossed the Chin Win in New Year's Eve, was it?
New Year's Eve 44, we crossed it, down at Kaliwa, or Kalimyo. And, as I say, it's where the Bailey Bridge was built.
And what happened next?
We walked across the river and we met up with another division. Or battalion of Gurkhas, I think it was. I'm thinking about the crossing the Irrawaddy, the Chin Win, yeah. The Japs started trying to shell this Bailey Bridge, but they didn't have any success. Our troops had, you know, outmaneuvered them. More ways than one. And that's how we progressed right through the rest of Burma. From the Chin Win, the next target was the Irrawaddy River, you see. And I always remember the Irrawaddy. We had to cross it, and there was like 6 men in one boat and a dozen in another. We made our own rafts and things like that. The supplies were all going to Europe, you see, and you had to make a mend. You made your own rafts and boats, and I always remember that. And they were getting in this boat down on the Irrawaddy, and makes you wonder if such a wider river than the Chin Win. The Irrawaddy is much wider, about 800 yards wide, you know, across. And yeah, we eventually got the other side, and I always remember going on this patrol that night. When was this? Down the Chin, I forgot to mention this. We made a patrol one evening, and down the Chin Win, and we had to cross the Chin Win that night, and the last 4 miles we had to march, and I always meant the last half a mile everybody was told to take their boots off. We walked in bare feet, the boots was round your neck, you know, tied up. And 1 o'clock came, who was there waiting? It was our padre, the battalion padre, wishing everybody good luck and everything. And the place is blackened over, you know, camouflage. And I can remember running down the banks, swimming into these boats. All boats that we got off the local villages used to do fishing and things like that. That's how we crossed it. had no supplies of our own them days. That's why we walked the last half a mile in bare feet, and I say the padre was there wishing everybody good luck, and you made your way down the banks and the chimney, like going down in quicksands, and you know, you jumped into the boat and across you went.
And that was his patrol to check out the Japanese on the other side, was it?
Yeah.
So you just crossed the Irrawaddy, and what happened after that?
Well, once we crossed the Irrawaddy, things are going our way because the Japs is on the run. They had no defence at all. We were just capturing them in the state of Southern Manchuria. No nutrition. They suffered more than us. There was no supplies, no food, and how did some of them survive? I don't know. They just got slaughtered. The British were having their own back for what they went through in 1941, you know, when the Japs first invaded Burma.
So where did you get to after crossing the Irrawaddy?
Target was Mike Tiller. A town called Mike Tiller is about 20 miles south of Mandalay, you know. And we advanced right to Mike Tiller. And then at that time, the European War was over. And everybody was listening to the BBC news, see what's happening. All those with 3 years, 8 months had to go home immediately. That was Winston Churchill's order. And lucky enough, I had about 3 years, 4 months then. But a week or two later, the order came, all those with 3 years and 4 months had to go home immediately. And that's how the war, you know, was on the end.